it's about harnessing the right talent. I mean, once you've got the right people around you, it's very doable. Like, I'm not the product, I'm not the talent. It's about what you do with the people that you have together and what direction you send them in and things like that as well, you know?
Was that your superpower, being able to kind of find and identify these talents?
Spotting the rhythms, or spotting the opportunities and the potential in people and situations. Yeah. That was definitely it. I could sort of go, how about we try this? And it would be a different direction, or it'd be something else for the person to do. Or I could see where your skills would work with his skills and how to make you resonate, you know?
So moving pieces around the board, pattern recognition.
Yeah, and bringing them towards opportunities that they mightn't have spotted, you know, that kind of thing. So I laugh at the guys. I'm kind of a professional truffle hunter in terms of finding opportunities, you know, like we're dealing with, you know, everything from disruptive strategy services to investments to data centers to everything in Dubai. So you never know what the next conversation is going to be or where that opportunity is going to lead you.
Cybercrime is exploding. Ransomware, phishing, AI-powered attacks, they're hitting businesses every single day. Most companies just don't survive a major breach. Nostra's CloudShield 365 gives you complete, always-on protection. Built on Microsoft Business Premium with advanced threat detection, 24/7 monitoring, and compliance built in, this isn't a nice to have anymore. It's essential. Don't wait until your business becomes a headline. Visit nostra.ie, that's nostra.ie, and get your business protected today.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20. Elevate your marketing game today.
Colin, welcome to the pod.
Good to be here.
You graciously have given us a couple hours on your flying visit home.
Oh, well, you know, I couldn't resist it.
Well, you were very hospitable to me when I visited Dubai last year. So it's great to be able to return the favor and actually spend some time with you again.
Oh, no, it's great. No, I felt when we talked, time went by very quickly. I thought we were only warming up.
Well, you were so good, because it was only after the fact that I realized that in Dubai, the weekend is now the weekend. Whereas someone had told me, oh, no, it's different. You know, you worked through the weekend, and then when I came back, someone was like, you know, they changed that a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
So you very kindly on a Saturday afternoon came and met this stranger for coffee. So
sweating in the sunshine. Yeah. No, it's great. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's an interesting place. It's a busy place. It's always hustling. There's everyone kind of goes there to work hard. So everyone's got a job and a vision and a side hustle and things like that. Saudi obviously still has the working on Sundays, you know, the week starts on Sunday. But it's definitely, you know, there's only an hour difference. We're back and forth between the two places quite a lot. But yeah, it feels like it's always on the go, you know.
How long are you there?
I got there 31st of July last year and then started spinning up the office on the 1st of August. Yeah. Literally got a night's sleep and got going.
Straight into it.
Yeah.
What was the vision? Why did you move there?
Well, a friend of mine had moved there the previous year, and he had been very taken with, you know, it being the kind of center of the commercial world. And he was so excited to tell me about it. I said, okay, I'll come over. You know, we had both exited our companies. We both were kind of free. And I was looking for the next thing to work on. And so I said, I'll come over on a fact-finding mission. So I went over for a week and met with entrepreneurs, bankers, investments, lawyers, real estate, you know, all these kind of people.
Were you looking for a move, or were you just looking?
Just looking. Really just looking at opportunities generally around the world and what was there. Kind of thinking, where do I want to spend the next 10 years of my life? What do I want to work on, you know? I'd taken some time off, and we'd done a bit of traveling and things like that. And I was kind of looking for the next thing. you know, did I want to get involved in, or did I want to build again? I felt like I wanted to build again. It's kind of, I'm hardwired for that kind of, you know, behavior. So we did a fact-finding mission, met some amazing people, got a sense of the market, got a sense of the momentum of the place and the opportunities there and the size and scale. And it was just very meaningful and very pro-entrepreneur, very pro-business, pro-build, pro-ambition. And I, you know, sometimes people are cynical of that mindset sometimes. And so it was great to meet people who are literally, you know, they're in Dubai. It has to be the biggest, the first, or the best, or all three, ideally. And how soon
biggest,
can it be
the
ready?
The first or the best. I like that.
And so, with that mindset, if you align with where the city and where the country is headed, business just becomes a little bit easier. Like, they have got Vision 2030. It's very clear. The city principles and the, you know, the guidelines are very clear. And if you can align businesses to that, then you've got a conduit. You've got a way of engaging and a meaningful way of interacting with business and the market and the future of whatever you want to grow.
Was it that this was the tipping point? Because that's a big leap from, I'll go over there for a week to, yeah, look, we're all going.
Yeah, I think... So Continuous Ventures was, I had built a group of companies before, mostly professional service agencies. And Continuous Ventures was a bit of a spill out from that. It was almost an accidental thing. I was working with startups. I was kind of consulting with them for free, giving them every second Thursday, helping startups, mostly in Dublin here, get going. And I'd written a much bigger blueprint, and we had announced a $50 million fund, going for a $50 million fund just before the pandemic. So then obviously we paused it, you know.
Wanted to raise $50 million for Continuous
So we were going to go big, yeah. We had big plans. It was my own personal investments at the time and so on, and I wanted to do a bigger thing, and we're starting to build out a team, but then the pandemic hit. So I exited out of my positions on the other companies and then, you know, got a partner in Dubai, and then we said, okay, let's build our global headquarters here. And so that's the mission. So then I arrived 31st of July. And got going the next day.
Bring me back though. You said you built out professional services businesses. What was that?
So I had, my first startup was a company called Continuum, a web agency. I'd worked with web agencies and animation agencies and things like that as well. So we had another company called Trilabyrinth, which was a Marvel certified partner, worked with Star Wars and some really, really cool stuff, mostly in the States.
What were you doing?
So the guys were doing everything from animation to, one of their USPs was artistic painting of backgrounds. So you got traditional skills in the backgrounds of games like Kingdom Hearts and so on. For example, Disney, the guys did the Tron levels and the Star Wars levels for those and so on in the past. It would all be replaced horrendously fast by AI now, but at the time it was really, really successful. Okay. It was great. And then, so I had built the Continuum Group, which was an association of these companies and agencies and web companies and so on. And we were working with cybersecurity firms and things like that as well. And then about 2021, 22, I exited from most of that and I kept two companies. One was a teleradiology firm. The other one was Continuous Ventures.
Why did you exit?
I'd had a couple of losses in my own life just as it happened. And it was just a good time. So we just thought we'll take some time off with the kids and things like that. But the interesting thing was with Continuous Ventures, when I was working with the startups, I found that very exciting, you know, entrepreneurs coming in with ideas, and some of the ideas were mad and they didn't stand a chance, but the enthusiasm would win you over. But I had all these senior talented people around me, technology officers, strategy people and so on. And I was able to bring them in to make sense of the startups. Sometimes they'd be talking over my head in terms of the tech and so on. So I was able to make these senior people that were a sunken cost to us anyway, available to these startups to help them, you know, quite often save them mistakes, you know?
Like, what areas were you working in? Because you said professional services, like explain to people like what those businesses did.
So animation, mostly web, e-commerce, content management systems, cybersecurity, that kind of stuff. So it was a couple of companies that did different technologies for web, different technologies for security, different technologies for animation and so on.
It's pretty broad.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was kind of like a backstage pass to every industry, you know, it kind of helped, but it was professional service agencies, you know, so once you got a rhythm of getting those up and running, you know, it kind of got easier, you know.
You make it sound easy. I know a lot of agency owners and they're like, who is this guy?
Well,
it is not, you know, easy.
It's about harnessing the right talent. I mean, once you've got the right people around you, it's very doable. Like, I'm not the product, I'm not the talent. It's about what you do with the people that you have together and what direction you send them in and things like that as well, you know?
Was that your superpower, being able to kind of find and identify these talents, or was it being able to see?
I suppose superpower is, you know, strange word, but spotting.
Don't go all Irish on me now.
Spotting the rhythms, or spotting the opportunities and the potential in people and situations. Yeah. That was definitely it. I could sort of go, how about we try this? And it would be a different direction, or it'd be something else for the person to do. Or I could see where your skills would work with his skills and how to make you resonate, you know?
So moving pieces around the board, pattern recognition.
Yeah, and bringing them towards opportunities that they mightn't have spotted, you know, that kind of thing. So certainly, as I laugh at the guys, hunter in terms of finding opportunities, you know, like we're dealing with, you know, everything from disruptive strategy services to investments to data centers to everything in Dubai. So you never know what the next conversation is going to be or where that opportunity is going to lead you.
What piques your interest in an opportunity?
The interest itself, I think. I like momentum. I like movement, and I like to build things. I'm tired of running things, but I really, really enjoy building things. So when you come across really interesting opportunities, and more importantly, really interesting people, again, that enthusiasm kicks in, and it kind of keeps you vital on topic and so on. You know, and then obviously learning new stuff. I still learn voraciously. I'm still playing with things and curious all the time. So anyone who kind of amplifies that for me or teaches me something new, I'm an open book. You know, I love to read.
How do you hone that skill? Because it's a huge. What makes founders great is that they're curious, right? But what can also be a downfall is that they can lack focus. Yeah. I've just done a retreat with 8 founders in Marbella, and a continuous issue we worked on with them was focus.
Yeah.
Because the bright, shiny object. Like, yeah. How did you hone that to go from being something which was a negative to a positive?
I think saying no is a superpower in itself. And learning how to do that first and foremost then kind of reinforces everything else, like your focus, like what you do and don't spend your energy on, what you engage with people and what, and the types of people you engage with and types of work that you engage with. And in order to do that, you have to not make it about you. You have to make it about other people, but you still have to be very, very clear in your own mind of, okay, as I'm always overusing the word deliberate, is what we're doing deliberate? Is it on purpose? Can it be challenged? Can it be defended? You know, that kind of stuff. So being able to say no and very polite, look, it's not in line with what I'm looking at the moment. Thank you, but no, thank you. Saves everybody. But everyone thinks, and it is the Irish way to be very polite. Yeah. Oh, you know, we should have a coffee about that. Or, yeah, no, love
sounds
to.
Sounds great. Yes.
Love to. Call me, you know. But when you literally just think, I'm doing them a disservice by not being aligned with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And they're never going to get anything out of me. They're not going to get my energy, my focus, my investment, anything like that. So it's just a no. So even for us, the investment thesis, we're able to quickly go back and say, this is not in our scope. No judgment on you or your company. We wish you the best, but there's better fits. And best of luck.
What are the red flags in an idea or a founder that you're like, absolutely not?
How much time have we got?
No, so I didn't start with the green flags first.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very frustrating time. You know, like, particularly when we started, we kind of opened our doors to all local investments and cohorts and so on to build our network and to see things pretty quickly. So we got flooded. We were looking at about 300 submissions a month. And a lot of them, you're just looking at them. Now you have to, will AI replace this in a few weeks? Not even a few months or a few years. Like we had looked at one Irish company, and they did that thing where you take photographs of people and it automatically puts clothes on them in the right light and shape and so on. And then Google launch it and it becomes a company killer overnight. So looking for those ones, the broad sweeps where AI can come in and just wash it away, that was a big red flag. Or not having what they call a moat or something kind of absolutely unique. Second one, we spoke about this before, was kind of overly inflated valuations of self-worth and company worth. That's a big one. You know, the 1% of the market. If we only have 1% of the market, that's another one. Here's our
TAM. It's
exactly.
$20 billion.
Absolutely. The biggest circle on the PowerPoint slide.
we just need 1% of that. We're going to be billionaires.
Yeah, those kind of things. You know, whereas when you see people who have momentum and, you know, they're talking to customers, and, you know, they're getting feedback all the time. They're not thinking to solve problems for themselves, they're solving problems for the customer. So trying to get the customer voice in as quickly as possible, as ugly as that may be, they've got the momentum, they've got a feedback loop and that kind of stuff. That's always much, much healthier to look at. And then your customers, if they take the attitude where those customers are early ambassadors, rather than, okay, thank you, you're now paying $99 a month or whatever it may be for this platform, it's like, great, you're on board now. Your voice matters. Let's embrace that. So when they take that kind of focus to the customers, and that if everyone feels like they're kind of in sales in somewhat, you know, no matter what part of the company they're working in, that's usually a lot healthier, you know, because you develop that floating ebb and flow with the customer, that instinct of what they actually need versus what we think they need, and testing it, that kind of stuff. That's the good stuff. That's the gold you're looking for in these startups.
Do you back the founder or the idea?
Typically the founder. There's tons of ideas out there, there's tons of money, but it's the execution. So it's the people. And sometimes you get some founders who they'll have done some entrepreneurial course and they've been told they're great. And they are great, but you know, they then overinflate the cost or the value of the company and so on. And as we say, you kind of let the world punch them in the face for a little while, and then they come back and have a much more realistic conversation about where they're getting. And then sometimes you see, you know, entrepreneurs who what they're working on isn't good enough, but you can see another opportunity where you think, if I just lift you from there and put you, plug you into this thing, that's going to go gangbusters, you know? But then again, that's about being kind on the person, handling the person and having an EQ with that person, you know?
What are their personal traits you look for? That if you're going to work with someone, these are the key things you look for.
Energy, vim, you know, people who can fill a room, people who can bring people along. Emotional intelligence is the name of the game, and particularly in a time where things are becoming more AI sterile, and you know, having EQ, judgment, and creativity. Like, you think about it, if AI is going to be doing everything for us, routine stuff, or anything that has a deep base of knowledge, for example, is already blasted out, then people who know how to harness that and then apply judgment and creativity are the people who are going to do very, very well in the AI era. And that's just about harnessing another resource. So I would often describe myself as a human engineer. You know, I harness talented people for a living. I'm not the bright guy in the room. You know, I want to be surrounded by these amazing people. So AI just comes to me as another thing that we can harness. So I would have, for example, got this big wide screen wherever I work, this big wide screen, and I'd have ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Gemini Pro on all the time. And I would cross-reference things all the time. And I use them for different things, but then I'd get them to sense check each other because, you know, particularly the likes of ChatGPT, it's very good at plumazing you. You're like, do this
for me. Absolutely, Gary. I was doing it for you.
Great idea, Gary.
Me and Ben were laughing about it going, it started here and we all got so used to how good it was. And then slowly you're coming back down going, oh, maybe I think she's just telling me what I want to hear.
Yeah. And then you'll sort of go, well, you didn't include this. You're right. That's a great idea. We'll also include that. And sorry, I didn't consider that. Now we'll do it. And then you see all these prompts out there. Think like a McKinsey expert from 25 years. Now do it again. And then you get a different answer again. So it's about finding, you know, the commonality and what is bankable and dependable with people and processes and tech. And that's where the kind of next generation of companies are going to do well.
Okay. So you'll have three AI screens open and you'll be using them for everything. Where do you think the biggest opportunity is with AI right now?
So, I mean, there's two ways of answering that question. One is where I see opportunities. The other one is what do I want to build to lean into those opportunities? AI governance is a huge, huge space. So it's one thing implementing AI and, you know, all of the companies that have seen what 8-second videos they can generate and they're impressed with it, or, you know, large, you know, repositories of data being churned and processed very quickly in LLMs and so on. So like, well, how the hell do we use it? And does that just mean we replace our people? Or like, how is that safe? And is it ethical? And how do we protect it? And how do we implement it and harness it, get something new out of it? So the management and governance of the AI is key. And then infusing that into the modern workspace, you know, and really having punchy teams, small teams, impactful teams that are fully versed on these tools is where you're just going to get very impactful lean teams and lean companies as a result. It's easy where there's no friction. It's very easy to apply AI now. It's where friction, like I look for companies that are dealing with the friction. So In other words, Google can't launch a replacement thing for what these companies are building all the time because there's too much friction. They're in the nuts and bolts of med tech or insurance or fintech and so on, where there's 12 layers of something that's very, very tailored and very secure and very personal. They're going to do very, very well still. But the ones that are just saying, yeah, we've got an e-commerce catalog and yeah, you can see this looking on you in any color you want, gone, already gone. They just don't realize it yet, you know?
Yeah. Good question. Good. You brought me onto something there. What industry / company sectors is AI going to kill?
Well, there's AI and then there's robotics. I mean, robotics will do the most generic stuff like sterilizing toilets and so on, stuff that humans don't want to do. And it will do the most specific stuff like Da Vinci operations and these kind of things, very, very, very detailed micro things where they're just better than humans at it. So that's robotics. With AI, I mean, generically, it can replace most things. It just needs to be told how to do the process. Like if you can tell me a sentence in structured English, this is how I do my job. It can be replaced by AI like that. If you've got a job where having a depth of knowledge is important, AI is already, you're in the back mirror already. It's where the judgment comes in because AI is just a data smash. It's probability ultimately. It's where the judgment comes in after the fact. So like we deal a lot in teleradiology, and with teleradiology, they're already using AI. So whereas a radiologist would have logged in 4 years ago and say see 100 scans of things they have to look at, now they log in and they see 300 scans where AI have done a probability pass, mm-hmm. and then they're either proving or countering why it's a thing or why it may not be a thing. Or in AI and radiology now is AI finds too many micro details that every normal human has. And it's like, this is an issue, particularly to do with breast tissue and things like that. This is an issue. And any qualified radiologist would look at it and go, it really isn't. That's, they're within tolerable normal thresholds, that kind of stuff. So that kind of fine tuning over the next couple of years is going to happen. It's happening very, very, very fast. But again, it's the people that don't know how to harness the AI are the ones that are going to be left behind. But like any wave of technology or cloud or internet or whatever, you know, there's just going to be more people running the tech rather than using the tech, you know.
What time scale are we looking at here? Because I can kind of get to grips with this and how fast this is all going to come to pass. I know it's already coming to pass. It's happening as we sit here right now. But in kind of real terms, when people still start to see the effect really harshly, when do you think that is?
So it's really interesting. I flew during the day. I landed here last night from Dubai, and you fly over Belarus and all these places, and it was very clear for some reason. I could see all these things like, you know, villages and towns, and then desert for hundreds of miles. Then there's one river and a little pocket of people and so on. And it did strike me as just like, are they all worried about the latest version of ChatGPT and things like that? And even in those regions, for example, when farmers farm the land, they farm the fields in circles, not in squares. Things like that. And you think it's very efficient to crop in a circle rather than a square. So everyone's got their different ways of implementing things and bringing things on board and so on. It's both faster than we would say and not as fast as we would say at the same time. Like it's, you know, everyone's kind of using it and dabbling with it, and they're aware it's coming down the line and so on. Yeah, jobs as we know it are changing very, very quickly. But then you sort of go, you know, people are still now getting used to smartphones, you know. It just depends on the amount of absorption in the market. The fact that it's available and can do all these amazing things, it doesn't mean it'll be absorbed. Like we were dealing with an insurance firm the other day, and they're talking about we were asking about their go-to-market, and they were talking about their kind of ideal starting point customer. And it's not a customer who is competing with the largest brands in the region with the largest SaaS platforms and so on. They're like, no, we're getting the company that's now jumping off Excel into first steps of SaaS platforms. That's where we're kind of positioning ourselves. And it was interesting to see because they, you know, there was almost a Luddite view to the movement from one platform to, well, this is more than 20 people now, it's getting a bit onerous. So now we need to automate it. So there's still that shift in the market. So I think, you know, yes, you know, probably the stats will be the same for any change in industry. You know, people will absorb it. They'll be the early adopters, the innovators, then they'll be the people who lag along, people who realize it's great a little too late, you know, and then their business suffers or the business shuts down or they get usurped by a lean, small company that is really, really punching with this kind of technology. But that kind of disruption happens all the time. And that's my area of focus is disruptive strategy. But that's been going back, you know, since men started to walk. You know, like you even think the plow was the most disruptive device that ever existed. Because then suddenly people had to stay in a place. They weren't wandering anymore. They had to have storage. They had to rely on the seasons. They had families because suddenly it was like, well, we need people to till the land, to grow, to survive. We're not just roaming and hunting and so on. So disruption is happening all the time. This is just the latest wave of it. And I think you get the same amount of, from an attitude point of view in the market, you get the same amount of acceptance of change and resistance to change. Whether it's there or not, that's down to human nature, whether it gets used.
It's hard to tell because we hear about everything all the time now.
Yeah.
We're bombarded
and the truth is, as I mentioned earlier, I'm looking at some companies sort of going, can AI replace this? Now you're looking at it sort of going, okay, what version of what platform of AI are they going to use and they're going to bank on? So that kind of drift of, yes, we're using the latest version of ChatGPT, and then a new version comes out in 3 months' time, not even 3 months, and like, oh, we need to jump to that now. We need to be compliant there. And it's that rush, rush, rush. Mm. It's like the old website thing of a new browser comes out and now it has to be responsive and that kind of stuff. So not being able to build something that can withstand these buffers of continual change or continual updates is important too. You know, sometimes you just have to say, let's not wait for the latest and greatest. Let's take this one, get it rock solid, nail the customers, nail the job to be done, and then give them the option of, you know, maturing the technology or moving with the more recent versions, but in a stable, predictable way.
When you were looking at your next thing, when you exited your last businesses, what were the kind of parameters that you wanted to do? What were you excited by?
It had to be a meaningful pursuit in a meaningful sized market. So it had to be something where you could take big risks and, you know, the market is big enough that, you know, it's worth it. Because it's, you know, it's very tough building one startup, let alone, you know, helping others build others too. And while you're building your own.
Yeah.
But it was just to make sure that it was in a market that was open to growth, open to change, open to supporting growth and the aspiration of what we wanted to do. And then in a market that was big enough that you could target enough of it. Like our region is MENA now, Middle East, North Africa, 700 million people. So that'll do from a market size.
Did it change you as an entrepreneur to have that comfort knowing that you'd had an exit and you were set now? Did that recalibrate your ambition?
Recalibrate my ambition is interesting because it was more of, there was two things to it. One was building your first startup can be a very personal experience and you're tied to it and you're proud of it and you hate it and you murder it and you go through all of these emotions. And ultimately, your identity is connected with it. The moment I started working on my second startup, that all went away. So we did more with the animation firm. We did more with in the first 18 months than we did in the first 6 years with my first startup.
Why?
A couple of reasons. One, I'd made every mistake. So I was trying to avoid them again, which is what I still try and help other companies do now, is trying to avoid those mistakes. But then secondly, you were clinical about it. You know, you didn't even have a job title. You were just like working on a thing. And that's, I've always been that way since, you know. Yeah, you have to, people have to be able to peg you. Okay, I know where you sit in the scheme of things and so on, but now they're kind of meaningful projects. Or as my business partner Colm says, you know, you need to land the planes. very, very different way. It's not, I do this and I'm the founder of this and therefore this is my personality and this is my position in society or anything. You know, it was more about that. And then it's about those challenges. I mean, you know, what do you want to be doing with your life? You want to be building things. You want to be engaged and curious. And yeah, some of it can be very stressful. Some of it can be very exciting. There's highs and lows. So you have to manage yourself through that process and be very mindful of that process as you go through it and bring other people along with that and share it with other people. But certainly, no, it's not, you know, you do sort of joke, yeah, that'll be 100 million exit or that'll be whatever exit. And we've one or two that are online for that. And that's super and it's motivating and it's, you know, you don't even think about it till it happens kind of thing. But it's more about doing meaningful work, spending your time in a quality way. It supports my lifestyle, my family, all that kind of stuff. And it gets the best out of me.
Did taking away the pressure of, let's say, not having to pay the mortgage or not having to go, oh my God, if this, our burn rate is 6 months, in 6 months, we're out of gas here. Did that mindset shift when you had your exit?
No, because you're still looking at the next project and every project has a burn rate. Hmm. Every project has a month by month review. Every project has, so you're just not thinking about your personal circumstances.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Personally, yeah. How did it affect you?
You're working on things. It takes some things away from your mind. Money's a funny thing because the moment you don't need to think about it, you don't think about it. When you do, you think about it all the time. Mm. You're constantly obsessing and or not
this
obsessing.
Is,
but
this is what I'm driving at.
Yeah. But when you don't, then it kind of, and Dubai is a perfect example of that because we moved a year ago and in Dubai, there's someone to do everything for you. Drivers and nannies and gardeners and things like that. But if you can facilitate that in your life and they do those things, then you're freed up to do what you do best. And hopefully that would then support that kind of ecosystem and so on. So then like I don't drive, for example, it's another hour of work in the car for me. Plus Dubai roads are mental anyway, but you can just get on with what you do best. And it's amazing how those kind of things, once they're gone, how much extra time you have just worrying over ideas or trying, thinking about things you need to kill or enforce or reinforce or plan, as we were talking about our, you know, one of our new platforms recently, you know, it just gives you a little more headspace. Mm. Makes you a little spoiled, I'll admit.
I was just going to say that is quite the position of privilege.
It does make you spoiled in stupid ways. Like you drop a towel and you're like, oh, pick that up for God's sake, you know, simple things like that. Or I can't tell you the last time I went grocery shopping, you know, things like that. But
that's one thing I wouldn't miss now, if I'm very honest. Yeah. I was having that chat with my wife
last week.
I think we need to do click and collect.
That should be on the tourist website. Come to Dubai.
To be honest, I've chatted about the pod quite a lot about Dubai because I was blown away by a couple of things. And that was one of them. Just order it. Yeah. Order it online. It's like a bottle of water and a packet of aspirin. Order it. You'll be here in a few minutes.
Noon, for example, 15 minutes. There's a category where you just order 15 minutes and it gets to your house in 15 minutes. Amazon typically arrives in about 6 hours. Amazon Prime would arrive from the time you order it. And that's like TVs and PlayStations. It's not just like last mile fruit or anything.
It felt like a glimpse of the future though, because we've accelerated and accelerated and accelerated. Our patience levels have dropped dramatically. Yeah. You know, before you'd order it was Amazon 2 to 3 days. Oh, class.
Yeah, can't wait.
Now 24 hours, you're like, it's not available 24-hour delivery.
Yeah.
Whereas Dubai felt like a glimpse into the future of that kind of immediacy because we're so used to like Uber Eats and Just Eat and Deliveroo now, that mindset. And I keep saying this to founders now. I'm like, you're going to soon be dealing with a generation who've never known how to wait.
Yeah.
So you need to factor that in. That's huge.
But it's not even never knowing, never having to wait. It's instant gratification. And that's not just with ordering Amazon or food or whatever. That's, you know, short content, you know, 8 minutes of a movie or a video or whatever, these kind of swipeable pieces of content. I look at our kids, you know, and trying to get them to focus is one of those things, you know, like we have them with tutors specifically so that they get time where they have to focus outside of school because school is still societal and engaging with, you know, whereas you sort of go, oh, you're doing French for an hour. Like my kids are doing Spanish and Mandarin and Arabic. Like they're being taught to be the most useful international people.
That's cool.
But you still have to keep them focused because it's, everything's just too instant, you know, knowledge and opinions and everything is just too instant, you know? And that would be my worry in a world of AI, because if everything, you know, if the knowledge is there, then judgment has to be the currency of success. And if you're not teaching them judgment, then that's a serious problem for the next generation.
I actually had this conversation yesterday with an incredible woman. She runs this law education program for transition year students, goes in and teaches them all about the law and how it's applied and how they play a part in it. It was so cool. I had such a fun chat with her. But she was saying like the awareness levels of current events have dropped to almost zero.
Yeah, that's true.
And she noticed in the last 2 years, she said 2 to 3 years, cause she's at this 16 years. And she said, it's just gradually declined. And I was like, why? She reckons TikTok is a huge part of it. That they're just been fed on a scroll feed of just
algorithms
like,
and doom scrolling.
Exactly. And a lot of like American content and a lot of stuff. Whereas even within the Irish context, she goes, oh, like what legal case or what like major current affair thing do you want to talk about? And they're like, don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on. You know?
And the problem is you can go down these rabbit holes of content and opinions and so on.
It feeds you either what you like or you hate and feeds you more and more just to keep you on the platform.
And American social is a perfect example of that now. It's pretty, I mean, there's a different viewpoint to the world from the Middle East. And there's obviously a different viewpoint into the Middle East from the world. Like if there was a war in Italy tomorrow, it wouldn't be called a European crisis. But if there's a grenade dropped in Qatar, suddenly it's a Middle Eastern crisis.
Yes. And that is interesting.
That's a big region with multiple cultures, multiple emirates and so on, multiple countries. So that you see that lack of perspective. And you kind of have to go there and be immersed in it to really get those kind of things. But then you look at America and, you know, the tolerances for being offended or tiptoeing around getting offended and so on. Like, isn't it lovely to never be offended in life, you know?
This was something I wanted to talk to you about because when I was growing up, it might have been the same when you were growing up, America was seen as the place. Oh my God, if you can go to America, oh, wouldn't that be amazing? Whereas it feels in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a real shift away from America, away from the established countries like the UK, more towards the Middle East. Like the Middle East seems to have positioned itself, you said it earlier, but like a center for commerce.
Yes. It feels like what I imagine New York in the 80s felt like.
Bingo. That's what I described.
Center of the commercial universe. And the attitude's there, the scale's there, the willingness to invest is there. And, you know, yeah, there were some regions that were just, you know, fluid with oil, and that was amazing. But they've used that to build other things and to navigate away from that as a motivation, you know. And that's been so impressive. And the scale of the ambition, like, you know, now they're building a 2 kilometer tower in Riyadh, for example, be the tallest building in the world. So there's a bit of one-upmanship there as well, but it's funny to watch and it's very, very healthy. That's how great
things are done.
Yeah.
Wild projects. You need wild projects to show us what's possible.
Like, I don't know if you saw NEOM, the line, for example, of what they're doing there. It's absolutely incredible, you know, and they'd say, they were building 170 kilometers, but it all fell down. It didn't. It's just that's how the world saw it. They were doing parts of it bit by bit. Yeah, they recalibrated investments and finance and so on. But when you look at the scale of the ambition and what they're trying to achieve, it hasn't been done before from a scale point of view, from a sustainability point of view, from a tourism point of view, you know, and even ads that have tried to slag it have ended up just looking desperate because they're going to have ski slopes in the desert. And so literally open air skiing on ice in the desert, that kind of stuff, which sounds mad until you think of it like that would be really cool. That'd be quite an attractive thing to see. And all embracing the ecosystem and at such a scale, you know, it's absolutely amazing. And they're doing it. They're building it on a day-to-day basis now, you know?
I think when you mock someone with ambition, I think you just look like the fool. I'm like, you're mocking them for having a go?
That's the Irish thing, though. You know, we're kind of, you know, like I've spent time working in America, time in the Middle East now, particularly, and obviously across Ireland. And they're almost suspicious of ambition sometimes and suspicious of what you're doing or where you're going and or there's a yeah, right aspect to it. And it's almost like I heard it described as like kryptonite. You have to get off your home planet to be free to kind of work on some things. And that might sound a bit cynical, but then when you, the Irish, for example, internationally are amazing at supporting each other. Absolutely amazing. I think they should do a lot more of it at home.
Why do we have that abroad and not here?
It's a funny one. It's probably one to solve over a couple of pints, but it's, I don't know if it's island mentality or if it's a leveling mentality or whatever it may be.
Crabs in the bucket. Keeping everyone together Irish at the same
lobsters,
level.
Irish lobsters, yeah. And
we had this, it's funny, a few weeks ago, we had Paul Buckley on and he's built multiple massive companies in Australia. And he was like, it's unbelievable. Irish network. And he's worked, like very similar to yourself, he's worked in the US, he's worked all over the world. And he's like, you tap into that Irish network, you are away.
Yeah.
He's like, you will get what you need done. You'll find people, they'll help you, they'll do this for you. And so it's interesting that we're not able to leverage. I mean, if we could leverage that, we briefly chat about this over coffee. I think we need to double down in Ireland on Indigenous entrepreneurs, people who want to build in Ireland, not, you know, FDI is great. It's got us so far. But we're always going to be reliant on Big Brother, whether that's the UK or the US, to bring us our meals.
Whereas, yeah, particularly the States as well.
Well, what worries me is people like you are leaving. That's what kind of concerns me, is that you see people like you and talent like you going to the Middle East to build there.
Yeah, I mean, what we are trying to do, like we do spin-ups as well as startups. So,
what's the difference?
So a spin-up would be, we would create a local instance of an existing company. So for example, Granite Global. So we built Granite Mina. So it's in our headquarters. We've about 20,000 square feet in a place called Production City. Granite is a web agency in Ireland. They've been going about 20 years, very, very successful. They've been growing a lot over the last couple of years by acquisition as well, including I sold Continuum to them a few years ago. But we approached them about spinning up Granite Mina in the region. I was still involved with them anyway. We had a great relationship. I really admired the guys who ran the thing. They're Ernst & Young, shortlisted this year. Great, great team, great crew, very, very hardworking guys. And so I approached them and said, look, what if we spun up an instance of Granite in Middle East, North Africa, or Granite Mina? We're now looking to our second office, which is going to be in Riyadh. We're in negotiations about that at the moment. But we've about $72 million dollars in the pipeline at the moment. And we signed clients like Saudi Telecom, the Ministry of Defense, things like that as well. So the cultural differences of working in Dubai versus in Saudi is very different. The time scale of things getting processed in Saudi is slower, but the scale is much, much bigger. Dubai is a bit more just like any kind of major European city in terms of dealing with services and things like that. But again, it's just back down to the scale and the scope of what we're doing. So I'm assessing cybersecurity firms to do the exact same thing there. We're looking at other startups and other platforms we're building ourselves. So I have what's called a disruption intelligence team who wrap around all of these deals and all these opportunities and help them expand.
Disruption intelligence team.
Disruption and intelligence, yeah.
What do they
so
do?
They're there to serve as different lenses on company change. So obviously we start companies, we help companies grow, we help them pivot, and they could be at any scale. So we spun out earlier this year a disruptive studio as part of Continuous Ventures, so Continuous Studios, which is helping companies disrupt themselves, change the processes, change how they address markets, and infuse that with AI. So it's an AI studio at its heart as well. So it helps companies grow, pivot, adjust, whatever they need to do to make the most of the opportunities, the scale, and also the threats of AI that are coming down the line.
So Continuous Ventures, describe to me what that is.
So it started as a venture capital firm, private investment, still private to this day. But we turned it into a venture studio. So the world of venture capital is definitely contracting. It's gone down by about 28% over the last 2 years or so globally, America, India, the works. So the venture studio is different because you're building your own instances typically. So you're not horse trading for 10% of a company or 20% and trading for valuations and then going on an 8-year journey. You're quite often creating new instances of companies and new instances of products. And so these teams can build them, they can research them, they can nurture them. And then you're typically the majority shareholder in that process. You funded it, but you're also the majority shareholder. And then you're trading equity out rather than trying to buy in.
I get you. That does seem more logical. Why do you think VC is declining so much?
So the world has been through a lot in the last, let's say, 8 to 10 years. Results haven't been out there globally to really justify some of the portfolios. Some portfolios that were based on Bitcoin and things like that got lucky. Some Mexican Bitcoins and things like that, you know, went gangbusters, you know, 1,300% and so on. But when you looked at portfolios, and we analyzed an awful lot of portfolios out there, it was very hard to justify the traditional venture capital 2 and 20 model over more than, say, a 3-year window when you're taking an 8-year view on these investments, 8 to 10 year view, and then you're going for fund 2, fund 3, fund 4. So, you know, we looked at those approaches. We were going to raise $50 million this year. We decided against it because we're reinvesting our own profits, reinvesting our own slots of investments into our platforms, companies we're dealing with or that we have invested in, or the likes of Granite and companies like that where we're spinning them up. Okay. It's more lucrative longer term, but you're more engaged, you're more in control. You get to, you know, govern a lot more of the talent and the processes and the approaches to the market. And so you're, as an investor, you're very engaged. You're not a limited partner in the background, sort of going, I wait for my quarterly returns or the reports, or here's hoping, you know. It's just a bit more engaging than that.
To go back to your word, deliberate.
Absolutely.
You're kind of the master of your own destiny.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on crypto? You briefly mentioned it there.
Frustratingly, I dabble.
Kind of felt to be a story there.
I did well out of crypto once, and it was sheer coincidence. I was buying a house and I needed cash deposit, you know, the way Ireland works. So I exited at a good time, at a good return. But that was completely accident. It looked like retrospectively, oh, that was a good call, but it wasn't. It was just pure, I needed a certain amount of liquidity and exit from that. I play around with it a bit now, but only as just a, I have two things. I had to go, right, I'll go in for 24 hours and dabble. Like Trump releases a coin, I'll play with it for a while and then get my original return and then put it somewhere else. Then I'll forget about it for 10 years. And I have that kind of approach with that kind of stuff. But we have a company called Paytech in our group, which is a crypto payments, credit card payments, all that kind of stuff. So that was the second spin up that we had. So there's a super talented guy called Stuart Isted. He was a regional manager for crypto.com before he joined our motley crew.
Oh, cool.
And he is running that now. So they've effectively, you know, built a digital bank in less than a year and a half, licenses and all, and superb partnerships, and their MasterCard partners and so on. They're going gangbusters, you know, and it takes, you know, you need the networks, you need the relationships, you need the licenses and so on. It's not easy to get all of this done, you know, and those guys are going gangbusters with it. So they would give us tips every now and then, have a look at this, or there's a new coin coming out and so on. But it's really to make sure anyone can get paid and processed is kind of the nature of that platform. And it's one to watch.
Do you make any investments, say, outside of continuous, like your own personal stuff? Is there anything you like to enjoy investing in?
Yeah, there's been some unusual ones in the time. Some people and friends and so on. There was I went in with Pat Phelan on a Grow Club, which was a digital first hair transplant company or something, you know.
Digital that first hair transplant. How does that work?
It's a finance model online first, you know. Right. So anyone could afford to get a hair transplant kind of thing.
Okay.
So those guys are hammering away. That was an interesting one, you know, and obviously I went in through Pat. That was an interesting one. And then, you know, some friends who are starting a business and so on, but you wouldn't bank the pension on it. That's so far, you know.
So you're going to keep investing in yourself.
Yeah. Amen. Absolutely. Amen to that. Definitely.
So you're in Dubai a year now. Mm-hmm. How has been the settling in been? You've kind of, because it's a big move. You said you moved there 31st and you started work on the 1st. Like, what's been the kind of biggest learnings over the year?
In terms of setting up business there, the scope is much bigger, but it's a lot more pedantic to get a company going. Like, you know, licenses can be $10,000 per company per year. And obviously we have a gaggle of them. Everyone needs visas. If you don't have a visa, you can't work there. And there's different types of visas. So they all have to be processed. Even in employment law, you know, there isn't pensions as such, but there's contributions. So if they work for you for 10 years, you have to pay a lump on their exit, which is the equivalent of like a pension for them. But these are kind of things that can really threaten companies if you don't factor them into your cash flow on a medium-term basis. Like in Ireland, you buy a company off the shelf for 300 quid and you're up and running. You replace Mrs. Jones and who the previous director was. In Dubai, you have to pick the zone, whether it's Free Zone, whether it's DWTC, the World Trade Center, things like that.
So location-based.
Exactly. Mm. Physically location-based. And based on that will depend on the activities you can have, the visas you can issue, the amount of headcount you can have.
Interesting.
And there's rules around floor space per headcount, so you get a certain limited visa. So that's tough to learn to navigate. And we had a lot of assistance in that, and we needed it because obviously we were creating instances of companies. Mm. So we learned some of that the hard way, and it can be expensive. And then you, like anything, you learn and adapt as quickly as possible to how you do things. So, for example, we would have had a fail fast, fail hard attitude towards looking at any startups or any spin-ups. Whereas before, you'd sort of go, right, we register a company, get them up and running, get them licensed and so on. Now it's like, no, test. Okay, now go to the next stage, that kind of thing. So it just made that a bit more focused, you know, because they're all cash flow burners, you know, in startups. Mm. And that can be tough. So... But once you're up and running, it's great. You know, it's everything is accountable. Like even when you're registering for licenses, they'll take videos of you holding up your passport saying, I'm Colin Meagle, I'm the owner of X, I'm percent, you know. So the accountability is great. And I think it's because it's an expat world and people can disappear every other day. You know, you hear nightmare stories sometimes. Someone left with everyone's lifetime savings and now they're in Kuala Lumpur or somewhere, you know.
Okay. To avoid that kind of fly-by-night stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Personally, what's been the biggest transition for you?
The biggest transition for me, I'm probably working too much. That was probably a surprise. You know, because everything kind of gets done for you, you've no distractions. So then you're working too much. And then you have to remind yourself, go on date night or go on this, that kind of stuff, you know, because you can just be engrossed. So, for example, a lot of business correspondence is done on WhatsApp in Dubai. So you're always plugged in. It's hard to avoid. If you've got your phone, it's not like you're ignoring email. You know, I don't do email that much, but with WhatsApp, it's buzzing all the time, you know. So every other day, you've been added to a WhatsApp group to talk about the following. So that's been very, very interesting. But that way, everyone's available too. No one's afraid of hard work that I'm working with. I think there's some super talent and a great attitude towards work. But you do have to pull back the mindfulness and be very, very aware of your own situation and your own health and your own energy and sharing your energy with the important people, you know? Mm. So that was I was always good that way, but it was a reminder that I had to just pull back a little bit and save a slice of the mental pie for myself, you know?
How do you manage your time? Because you seem like you're doing a lot.
Yeah. It's full on. I get up early. I never used to like getting up early, but I get up early. I go to the gym every morning. We drop the kids to school, or we get dropped off on the way. We're very spoiled. The kids get dropped to school. We go to the gym, come back, have a look at email, then go to work. And, you know, it could be in any kind of meeting on a daily basis. You know, we're looking at a lot of things. As I said, we're kind of truffle hunters in some ways, looking at opportunities. So, you know, 1 minute you're in a three-hour data center conversation in Abu Dhabi. Next minute you're in a pitch with a startup or you're meeting with a client. You know, it's very varied. So you're on the road a lot. And that's... No 2 days are the same is probably the best way to describe it. That's definitely a difference. I'm not somebody who just likes to sit at a desk and do that anyway. I like being out amongst it. We've just done summer in Dubai. So Dubai has a 4 month indoor season and an 8 month outdoor season. So we're literally 2 weeks away from the end of indoor season. It was my first summer in Dubai. And so that was a bit tough. It's super hot.
How hot is super hot?
42, 44 degrees.
Wow.
Humid. You walk out the door, your sunglasses fog up.
So what are you doing in those months?
You're sitting in air conditioning.
Really?
Yeah. So you're either you're indoors, the car is air conditioned. Like, you know, in Dubai, the bus stops are air conditioned. You know, they're used to it. I mean, in a world of global warming, you may as well be there. They're already used to it.
What are the biggest differences? Because you're away
over a year.
Call it a year. You're away over a year. I think I was really keen to get your perspective as someone that's built really successful businesses here in Ireland, has exited, and is now at the benefit of, like, you talk about Superman going to the other planet. You're able to kind of look back and go, oh, I can see it clearly now, because obviously when we're here, everything is so close and so immediate. You know, what are the key things you've noticed from dipping back in, like you're back in now for a few days? What are the key things, both good and bad, you've noticed?
So the bad things would be the lack of support and the lack of, I suppose, critical thinking. I mean, I saw conversations this week about Station F, for example, in France, and, you know, nothing says imitation like copying someone else, you know. But that said, you know, action always beats inaction. So at least it's something driving towards, an approach at least, but certainly not thinking big enough, not engaging the world at large, and don't think regionally, genuinely think, okay, let's target America. Like, let's target those customers. I dealt with one company and they have a very specific product. And I was on the board for a couple of years with them, and they were very clear. Their product was at a scale where they had 80 customers in the UK, potential customers. That was the TAM. 100 in America. So they knew their customer globally. They had one with them and they knew how to have the conversations. I think Irish companies need to just think bigger from that. You know, don't sort of go, right, we'll get Manchester and then we'll try something else. It's really just think, okay, we need to solve this for the world and have that kind of ambition, mm-hmm. that kind of global ambition. Ireland is a great place to build companies. It's just a terrible market to sell into. Mm. So you need to be outward projecting from day one. I mean, I'd love to be building companies here still, but it's the scale of the markets that we're working with now and the availability of talent and resources is hard to beat in somewhere like Dubai, somewhere like Abu Dhabi. And the need is there, the intent is there. But if you're in Ireland targeting American customers, you know, it's important to think that big. And so, right, that's where we're headed immediately, not phase. It's just to think that big straight away.
How do we do that?
Well, start talking to those kind of customers from day one. You know, like if you're in Ireland working on a platform and you don't have people talking in America to those customers immediately, giving feedback every single day, it's not really going to work because you're not immersing yourself in their world. You're making it about what you think they need. And that's the biggest mistake that most companies make from what I can see, and particularly in platforms. We think you need this. Mm. And I've been at one or two shareholder meetings where you'll have a CTO standing up saying, yeah, no, this is the roadmap for the next 18 months. And when it's asked about where's the customer voice in it, has been A/B tested. No, we're happy enough. This is the route, you know, and that's when you see tempers. So getting the customer voice, wherever that customer is, get into their world, learn their tone of voice, solve their problems, make it about them, and then bring it back to home base and build it, you know.
If you were given the czar of entrepreneurship in Ireland, right? All you as the czar, you sit between government and industry, you've kind of carte blanche to install anything you want. What Ireland is the best place in the world to build and scale?
It's a great question. One of the things I'd do is I'd get people to analyze past blueprints. Look at companies that work. Let's genuinely look at them, not from you're doing a business degree analysis point of view, but let's live and breathe what worked. Let's, you know, Sean Gallagher would always say success leaves clues. So kind of lean into those blueprints and see what worked and why would that not work for you? And let's just tweak it. Let's change it to suit you. Like that, teaching somebody to talk to customers day one. Platform, you're in sales. So talk to the customer from day one, make them ambassadors, get them in. Obvious things like it much more tax efficient to invest in startups, government grants, government support that's not after the fact funding. Okay, you need someone now, there's a check. we'll look at it over a 5-year view. You know, I even see, you know, some of my associates who, and it's funny because you're in Dubai and sort of go, oh, an Irish entrepreneur has just come out. We're a small bunch, you know, it's like you survived. Who are
you're
you?
Like,
you
know what you're doing here.
Yeah. We're definitely going for beers and swap war stories. But, you know, embracing, you know, taking the personalization out of it. Like I said, my first startup was very was kind of aligned with my identity. And that was the last time it was. Now it's just the stuff I work on and projects and so on. So getting people to think about that, you know, move faster if you have to cut people or cut procedures or make changes or decisions, just do them. Don't be fretting about them. Don't be thinking, oh, I failed or whatever.
Is there a fear of failure in Ireland?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a fear of failure and then there's a fear of what other people would think if you fail. But failure is a currency. It's an absolute currency. It's not a state. It's not a once-off thing. It's like you should be failing every single day, you know, because otherwise you might know that you're being lucky because it's starting to work. But if you're failing, you go, okay, now pivot. Didn't work, pivot. Didn't work, pivot. Those nerves, those skills are reflexes, are much more important skills to hone than it's grand. Everything's going grand. Please God, you know.
I know what you mean. So, as you kind of like come back to Ireland, what would it take to bring you back? It's kind of a variation of the question I just asked you, but like when you left, there was obviously key reasons you left. So I'm always trying to think of how can we make Ireland the best place.
Nothing really comes to mind at the moment, to be honest. Oof. And I say that with absolute love for Ireland. And obviously I cut my teeth here, you know. I thought long and hard about it before I went to Dubai to do continuous ventures. What would keep me here? You know, like if, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to go in for another chapter of something. What's going to keep me occupied for 60 months or 120 months? What, you know, what am I going to stay focused on? Do I just take a CEO job somewhere? Do I build something? Do I invest in something and meddle with it as well? And it was hard to find a reason. And also, I wanted the excitement of a bigger adventure, you know, and I think it's a good thing to do in your life, you know, to get out of what you're used to and start again. I think it's a very, very healthy thing for a human to do. But certainly the scale of a market, learning new ways, new cultures, new languages, all of those things that are very exciting. Burn a tremendous amount of energy, but they're very, very exciting. And it's a great challenge. So if it didn't even work, it was still really rich. It was still really rich experience and meaningful experience. And then you could apply that to any startup or any company or whatever. And I was mindful of skills if you know, I'm probably practically unemployable as an entity by myself, but if I'm able to harness people, and harness tech and harness opportunities and get that moving in the one direction, then that's pretty useful.
So you kind of said a couple of interesting things there about like, you know, harnessing the tech and harnessing yourself. But when you landed in Dubai then and you're looking at kind of the scope and the ambition, and it sounds like you're energized by it. Mm-hmm. How long of a time frame do you think of in terms of like your next venture? Do you think in like, you said 120 months, do you think in like it's going to be 10 years? How long do you think of the next stage?
So I saw this project has 60 months.
Why?
Because it's long enough to get stuff done, but not too long that it's just drifting. So you still have a pace behind it.
Okay.
And, but I, you know, have we committed to the region for 10 years? Yeah, most likely. And, you know, can I see the opportunities there for the next 10 years? Yeah, absolutely. It's been okay, but certainly practically you need a window of time to keep yourself honest with motivation and drive. You need a reasonable enough amount of time that you can, you know, get enough done and possibly even drive towards an exit. Like when you start a startup with an exit in mind, it's a very different mindset to just saying, I want to build a company, I want to get going. But if I'm saying, right, start it, drive it, sell it after 60 months. It's a different kind of focus. It's a different day-to-day approach to the process. And I'd actually recommend that to any startup.
Do you have an end goal?
No, not really. I can sometimes look and say, right, I know the next three things I want. You know, I'll settle down then.
I can't imagine you but it's pottering kind of, around doing bits and bobs. I can't really imagine that energy.
But that's it. You know, I really enjoy building stuff. I don't enjoy running stuff anymore. I like to rely on super talented people to do that. And, you know, I'm still in the process of still. When you're building things, that's very satisfying. You know, it's pressurized, it's highs and lows, it's people's jobs, it's investment, it's serious stuff. But it's a very nice way to apply your thoughts on a day-to-day basis, apply your energies. And so I'm very happy with that. And unless I burn out, I think I'd probably be doing that for the foreseeable.
Kind of advise your founders, or even how do you think about yourself in terms of time frame? You said 60 months there, but on the retreat, we had a founder come in and he talked about his 24-month roadmap. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes to have that pressure, he likes to have that visibility. How do you approach the, kind of the next 12 to 24 months? How do you plan that out?
So we would typically do a monthly review. We keep a bootstrapping mindset, even though we're investors, but we still look at it from a bootstrapping point of view. That's just an old muscle. You know, that's both myself and my partner, my business partner, Colm. We both build companies organically as well. So it's kind of hard to, it's hard for us to see these huge valuations out of nowhere and assume that's a reasonable valuation because we haven't seen the hard work behind it, you know. And you do see a lot of AI firms that just suddenly launch and they're, you know, one company's bought after 8 months for 100 million and everyone's like, they're all going to be that like that now. So that kind of immediacy of perspective is important from a, are we doing what we need to do today, this week, next week, and are we tracking it to get things moving? Like, so when you look at a Monday to Friday, what's the spine of that week? What's the structure of the meetings, ops meetings, anchor meetings? Is everyone, is communication flowing? Is dialogue flowing? Are people working on things? Are we getting product out the door or service or whatever is the deliverable? And is the customer talking to us? So it keeps that kind of grind, that hustle on a weekly, monthly basis. But then to be able to pull back and then look at a bigger picture, that's important too. Like we do, for example, the occasional what we call jet fuel meetings. And the object of a jet fuel meeting is you're not allowed to talk about anything operational. You're only allowed to talk about the what ifs and the act as ifs and the how do we get it. But it, that's not one where we sort of go, okay, we need more office space or we need, you know, to hire somebody in this position. It's like, how do we cover something in jet fuel, set it on fire? How do we get it to 100 million? How do we get it to this region? What if we had an instance in a different region? Could we accelerate? So that meeting, that the rule is there's no in it. It's really just what about, like, for example, I'd be like, want to spin up a cybersecurity firm as part of our orchard of investments. Okay, how do we do that? It's that kind of thinking. So it's good to zoom in and out. And have that. So you're working on the business, not in the business. And then you zoom back in and, you know, you look at the monthly spreadsheet or cash flow or whatever as well and who's doing what. So it's very healthy to get that zoom in, zoom out perspective. It when it's not your company and you're just an investor, you get a very different perspective on things. When it is your company and you're justifying it to others, again, you have a different perspective. And that's usually the starting point. It's probably why a lot of entrepreneurs make good investors because they can see that sometimes. But very frequently, those same entrepreneurs, when you ask them what were the good investments or what were the bad investments, it's usually the stuff I didn't get to manage myself. That's hard to take out of you. You know, oh, I want to get in there and make it work. But instead, you're sort of going, okay, I might be on the board or I'm an investor and I get a one meeting a month or a quarter and you get to give a bit of, you know, sideline advice. Trading.
It seems like what you've done though, you've kind of, you've good self-awareness to know where your strengths are, but also you want to be deliberate and you want to have control. So instead of just like, you started off with the VC model in mind, but then quickly realized that wasn't the model for yourself.
It took a while because you're changing some of the DNA of the company. Half of it stays the same, but the other half is then more build thinking rather than growth thinking. in terms of growing other investments versus building your own things. So there, that was a pivot that we did quickly and deliberately again. I'm very, you know, we'll take on a few more people in the next couple of weeks to just fill out some of those extra pieces as a result of that work and the extra responsibilities and so on and things we need to do. I think it's a healthier, it literally means there's more people walking around the office working on things. You know, sometimes in a VC firm, it can be a little quieter, you know, particularly when it's results day.
How do you decide, because you mentioned a number of things there, you know, we're going to spin up a cybersecurity firm. How do you decide to focus on that? Because you've truffle hunting away, you're seeing all these different opportunities. What makes you decide, yes, we're going to commit huge resources, money, time to that opportunity?
Well, it's obvious in the market sometimes. And you're also looking for the fail points. Like you can see some of the companies that are growing successfully. And then sometimes you see companies that are growing in the area, but they're towing a legacy company. Could just amputate that leg and keep the new one that's growing quicker. You know,
I get you, yeah.
We have the flexibility and the nimbleness to be able to do that. Say, okay, well, that area. So for example, in that instance, I'm looking at a number of startups at the moment where you think maybe we'll acquire that startup and the team and then wrap our team around them and amplify that. We're also looking at mature brands that might bring to region and spin up an instance. And we're also looking at platforms where you could buy a piece of IP and then put a bid team around a reset. But so long as it addresses the growth areas in the market, that's what's key. And that's kind of being a bit opportunistic about it. We build need on the market. And, you know, we've got a team of partners around us as well. Some of them have been on the boards of cybersecurity firms and or been involved. You get some insights there as well and some market behaviors. And that's really just how you look at it, you know. You know, we have so many facilities in our little group of companies that we can accelerate things quicker than just somebody in the morning walks in the door going, I want to do a startup. Mm. So it's just about being opportunistic about that opportunity. We spoke about a platform and that's haunting me that I want to build that completely designs for the invisible in terms of services. But we'll fail fast, fail hard that internally and then build it out ourselves. But again, that'll end up becoming its own spin up if it's successful enough. And then we start with 100% shareholding position. Mm. Then you're saying, okay, we need a team in, or we need to motivate a team with equity, or we need other investors in, bring them in with equity. And we're already investing. So it's an easy for a follow on investment and so on from someone else. So it's really just about harnessing the most out of those opportunities and seeing a market scale that needs it in a hurry.
So outside of AI, where else are you excited by at the minute? What other areas are kind of getting you excited?
So I mean, we're looking at infrastructure, which are very, very interesting. It's been a great learning curve for me, like looking at building data centers and literally cables under the ocean and things like that as well. That's really, really interesting. It's a funny model, as I say, you're building giant refrigerators in the desert and all of the resources and that are needed to model that over a period of time. That's really, really an interesting space, and we'll be doing more and more in that space. I like finding new things, seeing what people are doing, or, you know, where people are finding the opportunities, because it's very easy, like the way people use the word cloud 5 years ago. We are an AI CRM firm. We're an AI bagel firm, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's, you get kind of jaded to that very, very quickly. But when you see somebody absolutely nail the job to be done in any market, you're like, oh, that's just simple, clever, beautiful, executed really, really well. Yeah, want to be involved with that. Mm. That still interests me. I like still learning. I like replacing learning. Oh, we used to do it that way. Now this is how we do it. Great. Dump that. Get that mental slot back and now do it in a new way. People still excite me. Talented people really excite me. And it's interesting for me in Dubai because I landed, I knew three people, two of them are Irish. So growing into that network personally and professionally.
You really did land fresh. You landed just literally with two people.
Yeah. My family hadn't even seen the house by the time we landed, you know. I was like, trust me, it's nice.
It's lovely.
We live there. It's lovely. But even my dog came along as well.
Love it.
But, you know, so that excites me, the people aspect of it and the momentum aspect. I hate drift. I hate just things just drifting along for the sake of it, personally and privately, professionally. If things are just drifting along, it's just, it's a waste of time, effort, and opportunity and, you know.
Go or no go. What are we doing here? Yeah. Are we doing something
else? It's that thing of action always beats inaction.
Yeah.
And also being responsible for taking the decision back. Stuff's happened, it's gone wrong, and so-and-so's doing this, so-and-so's doing, okay, but what can you do about making it your decision now, and how can you act on that? Reframing things that time, that kind of critical thinking is very, very important to me.
What's the Irish network like in Dubai?
It's very good. I don't get to engage with it as much as I probably should, but there's a very, very good WhatsApp group. But there's, and there's some of the best Irish bars in the world over there, but they're very good. They're very supportive. The Irish Business Network, for example, had their annual event just 2 days ago. I just missed it because I was heading to the airport. And they had a super, super event, and they had all kinds of speakers there and opportunities and demos. And they push it very, very hard, always available. And like I say, the Irish abroad are amazing. They'll help you. It's like, we escaped. Now, what can we do to help each other? You know, that kind of thing.
A bond. Yeah. Going through an experience shares a bond. Where do you think the Middle East sits? I actually hesitate to use the whole region, but MENA, where you talked about there, in the global world order now. There's a whole bucket of things at the minute. You have the UK, you have the old powers that were possibly shining lights, but mightn't be anymore. Where do you see MENA and Dubai, Saudi sitting?
I think they're in a superb spot for a couple of reasons. I think that financially, they're too big to ignore historically, but strategically, what they've been doing in the last, 30 years or so has been very, very impressive. They obviously have some perception issues in America and things like that as well. Like, I have a friend of mine in Dubai who's a successful actor. And he couldn't get into America because Muhammad was in his name twice, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of profiling still happens and so on. But the Middle East have been superb at brokering relations. It's great. For example, when Trump was over, he was very, very happy to be there because they were investing a lot in data centers in the States, for example, and the Middle East as well. But there's that feeling that Europe is kind of full, as Macron said, it's full of herbivores and the world is full of carnivores. So you look at Russia, China, America, the Middle East, and so on. These are very, very strong superpowers, and Europe is kind of being a bit left behind. It's becoming the historic place to visit, which is very, very unfortunate. But it seems to be the way. Whereas the Middle East, you see, it has relationships with all of the major superpowers in a very, very reasonable way. And it's all business first. It's business led. And then it's relationship led. And it's been very impressive to see. But then secondly, when you see the infrastructure, it's obviously run by a royal family, a very, very powerful and beloved royal family, for example, in Dubai. And you take off of the airplane at the airport and you see an 8-lane highway going out to the desert. And ends in a roundabout and is covered in sand and nothing. And then 6 months later, you land and that's a full ecosystem, electricity, lakes, compounds, buildings, electricity. They execute on what they say. It's very, very deliberately done. And the attitude is kind of like, look, if we don't, then our descendants will. They're not fighting for power every 4 years. So you don't get that. The news isn't full of politics every day, people sniping at each other and tearing each other down. It's actually just, look what we've done, look what we've done. And that's a great place to grow businesses in because you can rely on the ecosystem, the political ecosystem.
You've got stability.
You've got stability and you've got momentum and you've got growth. You sort of go, okay, well, is the property out there going to be valuable? Well, look at what's grown in what's on the blueprints. It's aligned to Vision 2030. Okay, that region is going to be this in 18 months. And it is. That's really impressive. I mean, I would recommend again with Ireland, if you treated Ireland like a startup, I'd get a lot of civil servants to go out to Dubai, live and work there and see the attitude and the approach to service and public service and even technology, like you've got a UAE pass, which is your digital passport, and it's connected to everything. You pay your bill, you can log in via your UAE pass. And yeah, it gives them a centralized view of your situation as well. But everything is accounted for. Mm. And, you know, they're just smart like that. You get reports, this is how much water you use this month. You might have a leak. Things like that, you know.
It kind of feels like you're building from a blank page. I think, like, if you look at Ireland, like everyone goes on about, like, the health service, you know, it's too big to fix. And you're like, well, that's a fucking terrible idea, your attitude to have. Because yeah. You're like, it's too big to fix. Whereas if you're building it from scratch, oh, we're building from scratch, we do this, this, and this. I'm like, well, at least try. Mm. Whereas out there, they seem like they are building a lot from scratch, so they've got a blank page. What would be the best way to do this?
Yeah. But then you've got a lot of private business. The hospitals are private. The schools are private. There's a great school called Citizens where entrepreneurship is baked into the syllabus. And I don't mean transition year. It's all the way through. Wow. Communication skills, presentation skills, forensic judgment, all this kind of good stuff. An amazing, amazing project. And the founder, he also writes books and everything. It's you know, just a real visionary.
Do you enjoy the lifestyle?
I probably should enjoy it more. It is one of those places where you could live any kind of lifestyle you want.
Okay.
You know, I have kids in school. I'm in the routine and, you know, working too much on a startup. So I probably don't enjoy it as much as I'd like to think I've earned the right to. But that said, when friends come over, you do tend to see it in a different way because you're going to the fancy restaurants or the events. Mm. I had recently, I missed a walk in a forest. And I was like, what's the closest to going for a walk in a forest in Dubai? And of course, I Googled it. Yes, we have a 40,000 square foot indoor rainforest with 38,000 creatures in it. And you can camp overnight with your kids.
Ah, cool.
So that sums up Dubai. The scale
Anything
and the
is possible.
The abstract possibilities are incredible. Like you've probably heard of the Dubai Mall. They have ski slopes and so on. But they've also got snow lodges that you can book for Christmas week. So you wake up Christmas morning by snow in a lodge.
That's wild.
It's if you can dream it, it's available there. And that does go back to the way America was in the 80s. It was the American dream. Yeah. You know, you could do it and do a scale and opportunity and so on. Dubai and the regions definitely feel that way for me.
What motivates you? You talked there a number of times now about like kind of probably working too hard. So you are aware of it, but what motivates you to drive so hard?
Yeah, I ebb and flow with that statement because, yeah, you love the momentum of building things and the excitement of it and getting stuff done, and it's nice to tick a bank button every now and then, and that's all great. But then you kind of breathe deeply with your kids and you want to enjoy that as well. So it's kind of to try and find that moderation, everything in moderation, including moderation, as my father would say. The motivation changes from time to time. I like to jump on opportunities and I like to work with talented people. I like to learn. And so when I get environments where all of that can happen, then that's very, very motivating for me. What sends me in a downward spiral is if I'm just operationally working on a thing that's not getting anywhere, or is not growing or doesn't have trajectory, that wouldn't get the best out of me at all.
Are you addicted to the buzz?
Habitual to the buzz. Rather than addicted. I think it's it's a reflex. I think it's professional habit to do that. But again, the kind of people I work with, it's very encouraging to do this kind of work. And you get some very mixed perspectives on the world, which is great because you're learning all the time.
How do you look after yourself?
I would monitor my health very closely. I have the whoops
fellow
and all
whoop
this.
Wear, I noticed.
Yeah. It gives out to me all the time. You have one sneaky cocktail and suddenly you're basically a zombie for a day as far as whoop's concerned. But it is great. I like the, you know, it's got an elegant alarm system. You can tell it, wake me up when I'm in the green, or wake me up at a certain time. But it just kind of a little private buzz. It doesn't disturb
anyone
else around.
I get about 5 every day without fail. And it just, I love it. It's rapidly.
So that's good. And I know some of the guys there, I think it's a great thing.
I love it.
It would be, that'd be one of the things, you know, when you see something mentioned all the time like that, and it's being referred to, and like I've broken the ice by talking about these to some Arab who I don't have a word of English with. And, oh, yeah, you've got this as well. that's when you know you want to invest in the stocks of that company, when you start seeing it everywhere, you know, if they were to float and things like that.
Oh, but I'm addicted to it. I'd be the first one buying it.
Yeah. So, you know, I do kind of track those kind of metrics. I train a lot. I do a lot of weightlifting. I was doing martial arts. I had a foot injury, so I haven't done it recently, but I did martial arts pretty much my whole life. And I would be pretty good with my diet, not so much with the liquid diet at the weekends and things like that. But yeah, my health would be very front of mind all the time.
Is there any key things you do to kind of keep yourself right?
Lift weights a lot, get the heart rate up. Only eat simple ingredients like genuine, you know, something you can recognize for what it is. That's a pepper, that's a carrot, that's a steak, you know, not something that's disguised or processed. I started using the iMate supplements recently. I found them very, very good, or IM8, maybe iMate. They're very, very good, just magnesium, potassium, things like that. But also electrolytes, daily electrolytes. Hydration is absolutely key, particularly in Dubai.
It's 42 degrees. Hydration is definitely key.
And it sneaks up on you. I had a hydration collapse last year. I was training outside with one of those tractor tires.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sweating, but I was drinking water like crazy, and it just wasn't staying in
salts.
Me. And I practically collapsed that evening.
Wow.
It affected my speech and everything for a couple of months after the fact. It was a scary moment, yeah. But it literally, the doctor said, you're practically a solid. Like, you need electrolytes. Put me on a drip straight away. And so daily hydration, I'm obsessed with now.
Finally, before we go into our quick fire round, like, what's the goal for the next 2 years, 3 years?
Build some solid things. Bring a lot of people along on that journey. Obviously, you want to make sure that your own life is comfortable and safe, and that you're smart with your own work and your own investments and your private stuff. But do meaningful things. Build things that you look back and say, yeah, that was worth it. That was either a good project, or we built something significant, or we sold something significant. I hate wasting time, and I like working on an interesting, engaging thing with interesting, exciting people. So building that network is key to me now, you know, reaching more tangents in the market and engaging with more talented people, investors, entrepreneurs, and so on. It gets the best out of me.
Okay. Quick fire round. What's the best book you've read recently?
I would say Flow.
Flow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to mispronounce his name. Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi.
Okay.
I'll send you a link to it.
Yeah. I'll put it in the notes below.
I wrote a book years ago with a doctor in Africa, and we didn't get it published. He's quite sick now, but we had a reading list that was like Heidegger's Being and Time and things like this. And we were writing about the different types of intelligence in the human mind and how society targets it, and you've got a conscious flow. But this book kept on coming back to me because it was about finding the reality of what gets the best out of you in that kind of flow state. Like, you notice when you're really happy, you don't notice the time go by. That's the easiest definition of flow state. But that thing of what they call autotelic, autotelos in Greek, to self-drive. So if you can drive yourself through things, an autotelic kind of person is somebody who can see something really negative and still turn it into a game almost for themselves. They don't need external validation of how they're going to handle things. And it was that kind of understanding of there's stimulus and there's a response to anything, but there's space in between. And it's about understanding that space in between and being able to action that or harness that is a superpower in itself. So I'd highly recommend, it's a tough book to get through, but it's worth it. It's one I revisit a lot. I think it's the principles of flow, but flow is what you'd find it. But that idea of just when you're in a flow state, you're creative, your energy is available to you, time is nothing, you just kind of see things go, and it just... You're satisfied. You're in a contented state while you're doing this, and it kind of gets the best out of you. And that's what I look for in the work and in my encounters, is what gets the best out of me: people and opportunities and products. Like, what frustrates me the most is if I have to repeat things again and again, because I'm very protective of my energy. But flow, I'd recommend it.
You bring me on lovely to my next question. What's your superpower?
My superpower. I think spotting things, spotting opportunities and talents in people and how to pull things together. So creating opportunities out of nothing, or finding two things that shouldn't be successful together and pulling them together with the right people and harnessing those people. That would be it.
What daily habit is the secret to your success?
Treating the day the way you want your life to turn out. So get a little bit of exercise, a little bit of nutrition, a little bit of love, a little bit of rest, a little bit of mindfulness. If you just look after that, the rest tends to unfold as it should. You know, but if you do that, a bit of nutrition, a bit of relaxation, all of the things that you want to look back and say, my life was that way, get a little bit of it every single day. And you know, you can always say, well, there's the 80-20 rule of effort and reflection and all this. But just, I think, get a little bit. Make sure you force things into your day that are important, like time with your partner or your kids or your dog or doing press-ups or whatever is important. But treat your day the way you want your life to turn out.
It's a great Stoic phrase, treat every day as a single life.
Even better.
It's, yeah, as you're explaining to me there, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. What entrepreneur should everyone be like keeping an eye on and kind of looking at in 2025?
I mean, I'd have to go Irish on that and probably say someone like Patrick Ollison, you know, systems and businesses and processes and so on, and driving the cause forward rather than just, I'm known for one thing and do one thing and that's it, you know? So I'd say he's always got interesting perspectives, interesting things to say. And he's Irish, so I got to protect our own.
He's a pretty interesting character. Right, this question, I'm expecting big things from you. I'm going to give you 1 million, and okay, we're going to invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
Myself. Always, always, always better myself. And I don't say that facetiously. I mean,
No, I know you don't. Genuinely, you don't.
Yeah. I can see the next 4 or 5 things that I need to invest in to grow between companies and platforms and opportunities. And I would bank on me to do it.
I think there's a great recognition there, because I think a lot of founders do become investors, but they inevitably, someone said it to me a few weeks ago, they're like, every time I tried to invest in something I didn't know about, I lost my money.
Yeah.
It was only when I started going back and either investing in the area that I'd worked in all my life or started doing stuff for myself that the money started to come back. So I laugh, but it's a very true answer. If you were starting again, this is kind of a cheat for you because you do this all the time. If you're starting from zero, right, you don't have your money or your contacts or your network. Starting from zero again in 2025, what would you build?
I'd probably build a disruptive strategy, AI-infused studio.
You really are sticking to your knitting, aren't you?
Well,
how do you build out with zero?
Well, this is the trick with professional service firms is, the moment you start providing a service and you have the skills or you have the people with the skills, you kind of get warm water in the pipes very quickly. I mean, we take different speeds of money when you think of a portfolio of money. Professional service agencies get up and running. And as soon as you've sold a product or a service and you go, then you're typically invoicing and you're getting payments in. So now there's warm water in the pipes. Then we look at our investment portfolios where you're taking a slice from a company for a period of time. Or you're doing a spin-up, same kind of thing. You've got kind of medium speed money. Then you look at the longer term investments, maybe infrastructure, maybe data centers. They're bigger plays, they take longer, but they're very meaningful when they happen, when they turn over and when they exit. So you get different speeds of money. But with professional service companies, there's no reason why they can't be started organically. I mean, I started my first one in my parents' attic with my apartment savings. And I wasn't the product. I wasn't the talent. I was getting the talent to work with me. I was just kind of pulling it all together.
How did they work in an AI world, professional services agencies? How do you not get wiped out by AI in that?
Because in a world where AI is being implemented, people have to implement it well. So that still gives you that position. If you can harness that better than others, you've got a career.
Okay.
If you can harness it really well, you 10x it because you get that implementation benefit. And you know, AI is now doing the job of 20 people, depending on the nature of the work. If it's big data recall or big data smash, it's doing a 20x, 30x, you know?
Big data smash, but there are for a company.
Yeah, it is actually, isn't it? Let's write that down. But, you know, you get companies now that are selling the design and build of platforms fully automated. You go onto the website, you put in a narrative of what you need. It automates going off to another company to get that built and then comes back to you and says, that's grand, that'll be $600, $6,000, $60,000, whatever it may be, fully automated. Those companies exist already. They're absolutely flying out there.
Have you watched Layer Cake?
I have, yeah. I love that
movie. The art of good business has been a good middleman.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go. I always think about that. Oh, that's a quote I love.
But also, good business is where you find it. I mean, we've worked with companies over the years. There was a company that they insured the price of oil while it was at sea. So it could be at sea for 45 days.
Oh, yeah.
The market changes so many times and they make yield on the speculation of the changes in the price of oil on an hourly basis while that oil is swooshing in a tanker across the ocean. And if it's delayed, it changes and, you know, it's a green day for everybody, you know? So good business is where you find it.
I love obscure businesses like that.
Yeah.
I love random businesses. You're never going to think of it yourself.
No.
It's not sexy. It's not cool. It's just good business.
Yeah. And you don't need to talk about it. You don't need to post about it. You don't need websites and LinkedIn pages about it. It just churns, just rolls along, you know?
They're the best ones.
And it's very interesting to buy because you'll see, you know, you'll see people who have tons of money. And I mean, off the charts levels of money. And you wouldn't know. And then you also see people with the same level of money and their name is on every building. They're telling everybody. And then you get the average Joe in Dubai terms. And some of them are driving Lamborghinis and some of them are not. You know, people are weird about money. I was kind of had the attitude, you know, coins rattle, notes don't make any sound. So people are trying to convince you how rich they are. There's a reason they're putting that much energy into trying to convince that. Whereas you just see successful, quiet businessmen doing interesting things and engaging quietly in interesting things and getting stuff done, getting results done.
Money those screams kind of people impress and me wealth whispers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in Marbella 2 weeks ago and I was having that conversation with someone. He was just saying, I can't get over the money here. And I was like, yeah, how much is clean money? Not a lot of it's clean money. It's like, there's money screams, wealth whispers. There's people in Marbella, like they're dressed, just no labels, no nothing. And then there's the lads and the Balenciaga, everything.
Yeah.
You're like, well, you haven't got a pot to piss in. I'd say it's fake. You know, it's...
Well, you see a lot of real estate people. The teeth are perfect and they've
the suits. Yeah, the
Yves Saint Laurent belts and all this kind of stuff. And you're like, you're literally wearing your wealth.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But they, you know, Warren Buffett said, I know he's overquoted, but you know, you never know who's skinny dipping until the tide goes out. I love that phrase.
Mm. Who are you showing it for? Like, who are you trying to impress? The wrong people. What do you believe that other people would find weird or disagree with you strongly on?
This is one I could talk about for hours, but certainly that being able to show and use your vulnerabilities is actually your greatest strength. Definitely. People think, you know, well, you have to have bravado and show strength and force and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, no. If you're an emotionally intelligent person, your vulnerabilities should be one of your most endearing things that connects you with people and build resonance with other people. But sometimes you just have to go first.
What's been your worst investment?
I mean, broadly, I'd say anything that I didn't have a hand in. Because as you said earlier, some of the entrepreneurs, you know, I'd never be a limited partner because you'd be like, oh, can I just tweak this? Can I just adjust that? Or can I just meet the guys who are working on it? So anything that I wasn't more active on, or I was just on a board of where I was shouting from the sidelines, those would be the ones I'd feel both from a financial return, but also just from a satisfaction of engagement would be the bad ones.
What's been your best investment?
The best investment, betting on myself, I suppose, in terms of the things I believed in doing, like constantly learning, constantly trying to harness talent and look for opportunities and so on has been a great investment. It's very easy for me to say, here's investment ABC or company ABC and go, yeah, they're great. But I think behind that, at a time when you see the likes of AI coming in and saying, this is going to change everything, I feel comfortable that I'm comfortable in that world because my job is judgment and creativity and harnessing things. So this is another thing to harness. I say that now, you'd be like, smart ass now. He's been wiped out in 12 months by some bot. But, you know, I certainly see that as a real opportunity to amplify creativity and judgment. And I'm all for that.
No, human judgment is essentially all we'll have left, really, I think, when AI fully takes over. What's the best bit of advice you've given or gotten in the last 12 months?
Probably action always beats inaction. You know, you'll get people, particularly startups, and they're burning cash and they're not getting somewhere and the client's not picking up the phone and things like that. And you really have to lean in and say, okay, but what can you actually do? Don't sit here and stew and start pointing fingers or mean, what can you do? Even if it's a tiny, tiny step, what can you do? Yeah, jump in the car, drive over there, tell the client you happen to be passing by, can you buy a coffee? That piece is probably both in terms of taking my own advice and also implementing that for others. It's probably less than 2 days since I've given that advice to someone else.
I think it's words to live by. Where can people learn more about yourself and Continuous Ventures?
Continuous.vc has some information about us, LinkedIn as well. We're kind of posting a lot there at the moment. We don't promote our portfolio projects as much as we should. Granite Mean is another big one of those. But I'd say watch this space. There's a lot more coming down the tracks.
Love it. Colin, thank you so much.
Pleasure's mine.